This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and hitting subscribe on your friend's phone without them knowing. Coming to you from the Kitchen Studios in downtown Raleigh. This episode is sponsored in part by Joe Van Gogh Coffee, serving the community from seed to cup, taking particular care at every step to honor the bean. And now, the ice cubes are melting, and with food dying in the window, it's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And in studio today, we have the talisman of tapas. The man is a master with octopus. He is none other than the new executive chef and part owner of two restaurants in North Hills.
What?
Rosewater Kitchen and Bar.
Yeah.
And the new kid on the block, Las Ramblas Tapas.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello. Mr. Chef Brian Genzer. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, man. California in the house.
Yes, sir.
Ugh, I'm sitting with two Californians.
Southern California.
Jeez. Yeah, I claim both. I claim California. You know, NorCal and SoCal, almost equal amounts of time of my life spent. So I get them both. But you're, is it Newport? No, Huntington.
Huntington Beach.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Born and raised.
We almost don't claim that as California, just because it's like OC, and it's just very, you know, it's very different than the rest of California, but it's fine.
Typical Californian.
It's yep. Good. Surf, a lot of surfing in your life?
A lot of surfing, was on the high school team, traveling.
Wow, you had a high school surf team.
Yep.
That
yep.
is the most California thing ever.
Yeah, right? And we were probably the top two schools in California too.
Whoa.
For surfing. Yeah.
When you say we, is that because you were, or because like the other guys on your team were awesome and you just happened to be near them?
Both.
But you can surf.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
what does that mean? Like competitive surfing is basically you're judged on how you ride a wave, right? And then you get a score.
Yeah. So you have a time frame and then they judge how many like turns you do, how long you ride the wave, your style, if you're falling or clumsy. Like
okay.
They rate a point from 0 to 10 and usually they judge you on the best three waves.
Okay. So humility yep. out the window, because this podcast is about uh-huh. you. Like, how serious were you? Like, was there a chance that you could have taken it to college or beyond?
No, okay. Absolutely not. I just did it to get out of school by noon. Yeah.
Right.
So which movie is better, Point Break or Soul Surfer?
Point Break.
Yeah, of course.
Come on.
Yeah. It's
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah, Keanu
but Soul
Reeves.
Surfer, for the ladies.
I don't think I've ever seen Soul Surfer.
You'll know what that is. That's about the story of the young
Bethany
woman who
Hamilton.
Got her
oh, right.
arm yeah. chopped yes. off by a eaten yeah. by a shark. And yeah. then went on to be like an amazing professional surfer.
That's yep, right. Bethany Hamilton. My daughter loves that movie. She,
yeah.
for some reason, I don't know why, but she does.
It's a great movie.
Yes, it is. I guess you could say that.
Does your daughter surf?
No, absolutely.
Your kids are not surfing
no.
yet? I mean, you have young kids, but.
Yeah, I think they're more snow people. They just actually got back from Vermont. And it was hard to get them out of the negative 21 degree weather.
Mm. So yeah. Max is on his way to Vermont.
I'm going to Vermont next week.
Oh, you missed the polar weather.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's good. He's
fun.
A Californian, so, you know, yeah. he can't really deal with that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into this.
Yeah.
All right.
So the surfing, you're in Raleigh now, uh-huh. but rumors that you learned how to, you know, cut up a pig in a farm in Colombia, your uncle's farm?
Yeah, my mom's from Colombia, and when I was 18, so that was like 2003, I think, or 2002, we went to Colombia for a month during Christmas, right after I graduated, and she's like, you're going to learn Spanish, and you're going to live on this farm with us for a month.
Orale.
And during Christmas, they have a huge celebration, they raise a pig all year. His name was Chepe, and
Chepe,
and then
it was Chape.
Yeah, Chop Suey.
I won't hit the bell on
that. Yeah,
and then the local taxi driver pulls up to the land, opens a trunk with a bunch of knives and everything, and shows me how to break down the pig.
Wow!
And it was pretty tragic the way they do it.
Why?
They just take like a little metal, almost looks like a hanger that you make straight.
No.
And they just jab it in the neck and they let it die. It takes like about 15 to 20 minutes.
Oh, man.
Because they bleed it out so they don't waste any of the blood or anything.
But can't you still do that humanely? Like, you know, in kosher cooking, there's like there's a shochet, it's called.
Yeah, and they're not kosher, were they?
Obviously not. Well, they're eating pig, first of all. Isn't there a way that you can do that humanely? Like, can't you just cut the jugular and then...
The way they were saying is that they do it for this reason. They're able to control the blood flow, so they can coagulate it. That it doesn't coagulate, and they can make it for morcilla right away.
Morcilla?
Yeah, the blood sausage.
Oh,
yeah.
Shoot.
Which I was just talking with somebody. By the way, listeners, you might have been like, "What is Matt saying?" Your Long Island accent is so thick when you say anything that starts with an H.
Yeah.
Humanely. He was saying humanely, everybody. You and Donald Trump.
I think that he understood what I was saying.
We have a couple people in the audience right here. Did you understand what Matt was saying?
I noticed he was missing the H, but I didn't quite know what was going on.
humanely. Human.
Yeah. Thank you, Magnolia Megan. You guys know who she is.
That's why she's actually sitting in. She's actually a speech pathologist in her part-time.
Mm-hmm.
Just making sure you get those H's.
Yeah.
And I happily appreciate
it. I happily love this. Yeah, all right. So, Mr. Jenzer, by the way, we have a connection.
Uh-huh.
I believe your wife may have been the last person I hired at Standard Foods before I left after only a four-month or five-month stint that was there.
She is.
And,
she was.
Yeah, she was. Yeah. Everything was because it didn't exist for a while. But now it's back as a brewery, which is pretty cool. But she also is like, vested deep into the industry as well, and probably knows that you get to see, like, she's more front of the house as you're back of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that as a dynamic for a family, especially in the business. How does that work? Like, do you cook at home? Does she like challenge you? She's like, what's the specials today, chef?
Or
like,
no.
How does that work?
I don't cook at home.
Yeah.
When I'm home, that's when she gets to show off her skills. And she's a really good cook. She, in the last 3 years, 4 years, she's improved a lot. I bought her own set of knives, cookware, everything. Nice. So she's...
What knives?
What's like the go-to? Oh, yeah. What knives? And then what's the go-to dish at home?
I got her the new Headley and Bennett knives, the set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
They're actually really nice.
By the way, side note, I've mentioned on the podcast that I chopped the tip of my finger off back in December. I don't know why I'm so bad with knives. Like, for someone that kind of pretends to be something in the kitchen, that happened on December 1st. It's now like just a little after February 1st. So 2 months have gone by. Mm-hmm. My pinky is exactly back to normal. It's crazy. Like, you could never tell that the whole tip was gone. But like, the whole tip was gone. It was chopped off.
Yeah,
finger.
I can attest to that.
Yeah.
But just speaking of knives, my wife, my beautiful wife, for Christmas, before I chopped the tip of my knife off, in fact, it was the day before, she bought, former guest of the show, Quentin Middleton, a Middleton knife for me, because when we were in Charleston, the Charleston Food and Wine and Food, we interviewed him, and I said, man, if I ever I was to buy a knife, that's the knife. Like, that.
Yeah.
His knives are amazing.
Uh-huh.
So she, as a amazing person listening to her husband, took note and got me said knife.
Felicia is a very talented gift giver.
Yeah.
She
very
really is.
Thoughtful.
Yeah.
Maybe she could give a
pretty good cook too.
Hmm. Yeah.
But knife's back or fingers back to normal.
Uh-huh.
You're never supposed to
but give
someone a knife.
But maybe it was because the Middleton knife didn't really cut all the way through.
Or if it was
maybe it's like a
clean
a referendum.
Cut. It was a clean cut, so it also was a clean
soda. And he iced it. You iced it properly. Got to the emergency room.
Yeah.
But I didn't slice my finger with a Middleton. I sliced it with like a cheapo bread knife that you can't.
Right. If it was a Middleton, it probably wouldn't.
But
have
it
been.
Was brand new, so it was sharp as hell, and that's why it was gone. But you know, just remember, folks, public service announcement. And I don't believe in anything really, like anything. But I do believe in the Japanese lore of never gift a knife to someone because it metaphorically means that you are severing the relationship.
Don't say that.
So you're supposed to have that person buy that knife from you. So when my wife gave me or handed me this knife, I took a penny and I handed it back to her, and it was a transaction. So I bought it from her. And Charlotte gave me a pocket knife too, my daughter. So I handed her a $5 bill.
So Felicia got a penny and Alexandra got five.
Yeah, wow. Charlotte doesn't have a job. She needs money, right?
You see who's the favorite.
Yeah.
I want to go back to Colombia for a second because they are a great coffee producing region
yes,
as well.
Yes, they are.
Oh, man. And that's, yeah. And Matt's, that's a segue right there because Matt was talking about our friends over at Joe Van Gogh Coffee. Joe Van Gogh, you know, like, it's for one, it's about delicious coffee. It's also like how you brew your coffee. And if you're doing it right, you're like not messing around with like the cheap, you know, Breville drip maker, whatever. No. You get the Chemex. Please drop a little in that one there for me. Thanks, Matt. Because what we're drinking right now is the organic Red River blend, and Matt spilled it all over the place.
Getting wild.
The organic Red River blend with flavor notes of chocolate, caramel, clove. It's got a medium dark roast, but it's perfectly balanced. The folks at Joe Van Gogh understand coffee, and it's not just about the beans, but they even hook us up with how to brew the coffee properly, spend the time, the effort to brew it with, get your gooseneck, get the Chemex. Brew that thing nicely. You don't need you don't need sugar and cream and all that stuff. No, if it's brewed properly, the coffee itself is perfect, right? Yep. I'm getting a thumbs up from Matt over here.
Yep.
And yeah, that's delicious. So if you want delicious coffee as well, go to jovango.com, get all your coffees. They have shops all throughout the Triangle. I think there's 7 locations proudly pouring it. And you can get it even around the corner from us over here at Sir Walter Coffee. They have Joe Van Gogh. So check them out, and we'll get back to the show now that we've cleaned up all the mess.
Yeah. But truthfully, back to Colombia for a second. Uh-huh. So when you were there, like, was there any thought that – was that your first culinary experience? Like, did you work in a restaurant before there?
I did things just like, you know, delivering pizzas or washing dishes, but never.
Okay, so
like,
you had, and then you broke down a pig, and then were you like, this is it? I want to do this?
Well, I had to go back to reality.
Yeah.
So I went back to community college, took a couple culinary classes besides your typical English, math, stuff like that.
Wait, did you go to OPCC?
OCC.
I mean, OCC?
Yes, sir.
With the Workaholics.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where I went.
You're about the same age as them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I didn't.
Blake
I didn't,
and.
No, I didn't see them. No.
Oh,
no.
Right. All right. Anyway.
But that was the same school. It was. And then after the first year, my instructor just told me, hey, quit this. Just go to New York. So literally 3 months, he wrote me a letter. I went to enrolled for the CIA, Culinary Institute of America.
Yeah.
And then I was out there for their starting of their summer program. Because it's weird out there. They start every 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, I think, they start a new class.
Yeah, and they're up there in the Hudson River Valley, just north of New York City.
Yep. So I did 2 years and
the
got
Hudson
my...
Hudson River Valley?
The Hudson,
Hudson.
Yeah.
Right next to Poughkeepsie. Yeah. So it was great. 2 years and then moved back to Manhattan and started working there.
Yeah, and then... for a while. You talk about it, just didn't work anywhere. You worked with David Chang.
Yeah, I worked for David Chang for a little over a year at the OG Noodle Bar, which was a trip, which was fun. But I wouldn't change anything about it. It was either you were going to work there, and that was going to be what you're going to do for the rest of your life, or he would break you and you're done.
Yeah. How do you
plain and simple?
How do you even get a job with David Chang? Like, was that through CIA or you knew
it was still a young company. It was end of 2007, 2008, beginning of 2008. And I just wrote a letter, sent him a letter, and then I showed up on the door like your typical old school cook.
Like a snail mail letter.
Yeah. I just wrote a letter and then they got it. I showed up on the door, and then he's like, oh, yeah, we got your letter. I was like, well, can I do a trail or what? He's like, come back in a week. So I came back in a week, did a trail, and I got hired.
I love that story, man.
Yeah.
I wrote a letter, and then I showed up to follow up.
Yeah.
But they had gotten the letter.
Gen Z, do you even know what a letter is? No, you don't.
No.
Write letters.
Yeah.
That actually means something. It's important. I want to know how you... Like you said, you'd make it be there forever, or he'd break you down. Just give me some story of the breakdown. I would love to know, like, a challenge or some sort of high-pressure situation that really, you know, is not the norm, like what people don't normally see or understand about being in the kitchen business.
It's just for him, you know, it was his baby. He opened it from scratch. So everything had to be perfect. So just imagine from right when you're walking in the door, someone just, it was me and like literally three other guys in the kitchen. So just imagine him looking down on you, everything you're doing, from cutting chives to shaving radishes, everything. Big 200-pound Korean dude just standing, looking over your shoulder, and just smirking out random comments all day long. You
Did
know?
You cut tape or rip tape?
Oh, we cut tape. Yeah. Trust me. We cut tape. We put our initials on it, time, date. Everything.
Oh, so you initialed what the tape was?
No, we had to initial our initials on it. Who prepped the item?
That's what I'm saying. Like yeah. you had to put yeah. your name on the thing yep. that was there.
Oh, that's yep. called accountability.
Yes. Yeah. That's called scary.
Who did this nonsense? Yeah. Yo, BJ.
Exactly. Exactly. So
that was like a year of Chang boot camp that exactly. set your career.
Yeah, in the right position, right way.
You know, Wolfgang Puck has a university of school, and they call it Puck U.
Puck U.
Like, literally. And it's in Orange County. That's yeah. where it was at. But yeah, same thing. But that's insane, mm-hmm. man. So it's just, I mean, unpacking David Chang in just a certain way could just be an entire episode. I don't want to go too deep into that. But just, you know, he's got a style of cooking. It's mm-hmm. obviously you've got like the Korean style, just like an Asian overall, you know, section. Mm-hmm. Were you focused when you were at the CIA into that realm, or were you a blank slate and he taught you?
I was a blank slate. Yeah. Total blank slate. Just going out there to see what college was like, cooking, everything. And then once I got the job there, I really got into Korean food, Japanese cuisine, things on that realm. Mm-hmm. And then after that, did a couple other jobs around back in California, Florida. But then I got the opportunity to go to Singapore. And then that's where it just took my love for Japanese and Korean and Asian influence.
Iggy's.
Yeah, Iggy's.
One of the top 50 restaurants in the world.
Yep. Well, that was.
Okay, two questions there because I want to get to Iggy's. Uh-huh. But going back to the teacher who told you, hey, man, I think you should go to New York. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write you a letter.
Yeah.
I wonder, Max, if that would be different today. Because back in those days, L.A. was not the food town that it is now.
No.
And I wonder if, do you think, obviously she thought like, oh, if you're going to be a serious uh-huh. chef, you need to go to New York, right?
Yeah. That was everyone's thought back then.
Yeah. But you think that would be the same today?
I don't know. I think it was just his look, because this was before Yountville CIA was open, mm-hmm. and he was an alum from that school.
Okay.
So I think he just felt like, all right, this guy has to go do the steps that I did.
Okay.
To be successful.
Gotcha.
And he knew I wanted it. Like, I was first there after, I was in that class all the time.
Yeah.
So he's like, just follow my steps and you'll be successful, you know, so that's why.
That's right, and Yountville didn't exist at that time. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's so important too, is like going with your connections. I mean, sadly, we talk about this, and unfortunately, it's like a lot of times it's who you know.
Not what you know.
Right, but also, a lot of people know a lot of people, and they don't take them up on the thing.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, when people get bitter and say, oh, that guy just, you know, he was friends with so-and-so and that's why they're there. It's like, yeah, you're friends with people and you don't take them up on what they're saying to you as well. Like, everyone has some connection or something. You just, it's use your resources as much as you possibly can.
Exactly.
Don't wish for those things to happen. Look at what you have.
It's not about getting the door cracked open for you. It's what you do once you're inside the door.
Right. That's a good one.
And opening it yourself, too. Like,
well, no, but you might have to know somebody to crack the door open, right?
Yeah.
Or you might have to write the letter and show up at the door. But, like, I'll use a football reference. And not that I like the Eagles, I can't stand them. Oh. But the Super Bowl is this weekend. And, you know, Nick Sirianni, the reason that he got a job with Kansas City Chiefs was way back in the day when Todd Haley was the coach of the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. I think he literally saw him at the grocery store and was like, hey, man. And they, like, struck up a casual conversation and eventually worked himself into a job there, like a very minimal job with the Kansas City Chiefs. And now he is potentially a Super Bowl coach.
He is a Super Bowl coach.
He is.
Hopefully not a Super Bowl winner coach, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh, because you don't want the Eagles because you're a Giants fan.
Yeah, but I also
and
like the Chiefs.
I don't want the Chiefs because I'm a Raiders fan, so go fly Eagles, fly.
Oh, jeez.
I thought you were going to say, you know, Kip sends me all these, like, positive affirmation posts on Instagram all the time. Kip Downer, my partner, of Craft, and he's great. And like, you know, he's
part
always
of our thruple.
Yes, exactly. And he sent me something that was from what Ray Lewis had said, which, by the way, Ray Lewis, positive motivational speaker, but I tend to not take a lot of things by what he says.
Scenario.
As like, yeah, I want to do just what Ray Lewis did. But he said something like, an eagle, when flying high, if he sees another bird flying at his same altitude, he knows that that is probably another eagle because... like
no
because
other
of where
birds.
He's because of where you're at. I'm totally ruining this whole thing, but so like if you fly low with the pigeons, then that's kind of basically where whatever you'll be. But if you fly high with the eagles, you'll only be in company with other eagles.
Fly high.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Keep good company, you know.
Gotcha.
Which kind of goes back to this idea. I mean, you could have learned how to cook in a restaurant from many chefs. Many people could tell you how to not slice your finger off and things like that. Mm-hmm. But you chose to go to arguably one of the top restaurateurs and chefs in the nation, if not the world, in David Chang. And it probably kept your goal or your focus like high. And you're doing that. Because I do want to relate it back to why you're here talking about today and like what's going on. Mm-hmm. You are the chef at Las Ramblas, which I had the pleasure of going to one of your sneak previews a couple weeks ago with my beautiful knife purchasing wife.
Thoughtful gift buyer.
Yeah. And we sat at the bar. And by the way, side note, this is funny, and this is just to feed my ego, but it was pretty cool. Both Laszlo and Georgios, of course, this is a Georgios Bakshaw restaurant, and Laszlo, his business partner, both were very generous with their time, coming up to me, shaking hands. You yourself, Brian, came up to the bar, and then other people, because it was kind of an industry thing, were coming up and just like always shaking our hands. Kitty Kinnon was there, and Clark Hippolyta was there. And so at the end of the night, as we're walking out, these two ladies, of whom I do not know, just they had obviously been served a few, but they were like, "Hey, you!" And I'm like, "Yeah? Why are you so special? Everyone seems to be coming up to you. We need to know who you are. Who are you?" And I said, "You don't know who I am?" And they're like, "No." I'm like, "Honey, will you please tell them?" No, but it was amazing. Funny. And then we like struck up a conversation. We had a good time. But it was hilarious. You guys made me feel like a big star. And that was really cool. Awesome. But that's hospitality. That's what you guys were doing. And that's what like the hope is like, take care of people when you're there. Make them feel great. And that's exactly what you did. Had nothing to do with the food. It was all about the experience. But the food, I got to say.
Thank you.
There's one dish that just for me embodies tapas, and I think I even said it to you when you were there, and it's like I said it to Felicia while we were driving in coming in. I'm like, all I want is the shrimp. Like, I just want
the gambas.
Yeah. Like, if I can get gambas and it's done right, then I know that Brian has done his job. And it was perfect.
It was flawless
and it was just like overflowing. I mean, it was usually tapas are very small bites, but you know, we're fat Americans, we want a little bit more food, so I feel like you did kind of these are not tiny tapas. This is pretty substantial dishes. And so I had that. You could have ruined everything else after that. It didn't even matter because it was so perfect there. You didn't. Awesome. Everything's great.
Thank you.
But you said it right. And so if somebody wants traditionally, you know, well-cooked tapas, Spanish tapas, you're going to be in for it when you go to Las Ramblas, which, you know, plug. But yeah, well, the whole episode's a plug, I guess. But it's in North Hills here in Raleigh, and that whole place is just blowing up. So
yeah, it's crazy. It's growing nonstop right now.
We were going to record that week, but your hair was on fire because you're not just doing that. You're running a lot of restaurants right now.
Yeah. So I am still overseeing Rosewater. And then this week will be 1 month for Las Ramblas. Time flies by fast. Thank you. Thank you. But no, that week when you came in, Matt came in on Saturday.
Thursday last week.
It's fun cooking for people that you know, because you can actually get proper feedback.
Yeah.
And you can actually like try to send them dishes that you want them to try. Like you had that special.
Yeah, with the beans and the pork cheek
and the cockles.
The cockles, yeah.
Ooh.
So it's things like that that make hospitality fun for me. To be able to do these dishes on people I know, be like, all right, honest opinion.
Yeah.
Does it suck or is it good? You know?
you want to know.
Yeah, exactly. Not just people.
You don't want to hear some shitty Yelp review later on.
Exactly.
Like, this wasn't the favorite thing I ever had.
Or what was the other one? The owner should go to Spain and see what real tapas are.
Oh, my God.
I read that one.
Well, actually, that's a great segue because
you did.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
We did. Me and Lazo went to Spain for 6 days. We majorly stayed in Barcelona.
Should have been seven.
I know. We should have been there for eight, and then we would have been so much better. But we were there for 7 days, just nonstop eating, nonstop drinking. Went to some of the great cocktail bars they have out there. And I think people have like a misidea of what tapas are. You know, a lot of people think it's like the anchovies or the stuffed piquillo peppers and the huge croquetas. And it is. Some places are like that. But just Spanish food is more modern than what we think it is. So when you say Spanish tapas, they're doing a lot of modern cooking styles with small plates for tapas.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of took away. So I try to do some of your classics like the bomba, your bocarones, but add different flavors to it that you don't normally see there. Like the orange zest in the bocarones, or what's in it, the suckling pig, how we get the whole pigs in, break it down, and we serve you like a little square, but it has all the pig meat in it, you know? Yeah. So it's things like that that we really learn what true tapas that the big tapas restaurants were doing, you know?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole idea of tapas was based around it would be in your cocktail bar or your local watering hole that they would have to feed you something.
I have it exactly right here, Matt. According to popular legend, it began in the 13th century under King Alfonso X, the Wise. He was prescribed a large quantity of wine whilst recovering from an illness and ate small portions of food to diminish the effects of alcohol. Therefore, he decided, everyone needs this. If we are serving alcohol at these places, you must have small amounts of food while consuming alcohol.
Yeah. And so as they evolve, obviously, smart bar or cocktail bar owners know that, like, if I cook food and it's salty, you'll drink more and you'll stay longer and you'll spend more money. So, yeah, it wasn't like a super cuisine driven. That's why, like, oh, let's slice some ham. Let's give you, throw you some anchovies. They're super salty and tasty and make you want to drink more. And now it's evolved. So I think, like, and that's at the end of the day, like, screw the haters. Like, it's evolution. Yeah. It's a Spanish restaurant that's hearkening to Spain, but that is in North Carolina. So
exactly.
Yeah, so you're doing what you want to do with Spanish influence.
Yeah, and that's exactly, you couldn't have said it even better. And with Spanish influence too, they use a lot of pork, which is being in North Carolina is awesome.
Right,
that's a cornerstone. Yeah,
exactly. But so we get a lot of pork product, local pork product.
And here we kill them humanely.
Yes, very humanely.
Easy on the H, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, usually the butchers aren't stepping out of a taxi cab to kill them.
With a wire.
So, but I love that. I was going to ask you, you know, because you've cooked in all these different types of genres and all, and even can be in Singapore and cooking Korean food and all. And I assume that being at the CIA, you probably were given like proper French, you know, instruction as well. But you already were there, so I'd like to get right there. When you said Spanish is kind of like modern and it's like pushing, we all know that like El Bulli and like all these like El Bulli, whatever, and all these great restaurants kind of come from Spain.
Yeah.
Spain, in a lot of ways, doesn't preserve the traditions. It's cutting edge. It's creating the new, the new. So I was going to ask, like, what makes you think you know how to do Spanish food? But
I guess
Spanish food is what it is right now, right?
Like, yeah.
So walk me through the steps of like how you were able to kind of combine, like create a menu in a Spanish cuisine.
So what we did, we just basically took the highlights of our trip, like the flavors, ingredients, the certain sauces. And I kind of just combined that with things that I think would sell here and what I know I've done in the past too. Because doing a brand new menu, you got to have some things you know you can execute off the bat every time, 100%. So that's how we did like the rolled chicken thigh. You know, we use our friend meat glue, things like that. Use a circulator. Because you know you're going to put out, it's not your standard restaurant. You're not just putting out like 15 or 20 of these plates. We're putting out 45 of this dish, 50 of these dishes, you know, so everything has to be prepped properly from what I knew in the past, but with the Spanish ingredients. So I still do research. Every night I try to hit I have a Spanish culinary book that I've been reading. Try to find out new ingredients. Just keep researching. And we work with a great company called Despaña. They're based out of Astoria in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they're importing majority of our Spanish ingredients. So
if I was to ask, if you have it off the top of your head, give me like two or three ingredients that you should have in your pantry if you want to cook Spanish food.
Jamón. Jamón. Yukon potatoes. They use potatoes in a lot of dishes.
Oh, I was not expecting you to say that. Yukon potatoes, okay.
Yukon, not russets, but Yukons.
Yukons.
That.
What about like...
And paprika.
Oh, paprika.
Yeah.
I was hoping you were going to start talking about things like sherry or a certain type of like banyuls or like some type of like...
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like a wine-based sauce or vinegar or anything like that. Is there anything that, like, would be...
We do use sherry vinegar.
Yeah.
Sherry vinegar is used in everything. Manchego cheese, same thing. We use that. You also got to think, too, a lot of their ingredients that they use in Spain are local and cost-effective, too. So that's why they use abundance of potatoes, because they grow everywhere in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry vinegar, because they produce it there. The chorizo, the byproduct from the pig.
Yeah.
You know, and when you go there, too, you can see it in their menu price. You know, they're not charging. We went for a 12-course tasting menu, and it was $72 a person.
Oh, that's crazy.
€72 a person.
Where in Spain did you go?
We were just in Barcelona.
Yeah.
We just stayed in Barcelona.
That's all you need.
We were just right off.
I mean, if you're just going to get a tapas,
demographics in Spain just shot way down.
Yeah.
No, I went to Spain for my honeymoon, and we went all over. I'll try to say the words the way Matt would like me to say them, like Cadiz or Barcelona.
Yeah.
But
there you go.
But we were in Madrid. We were in Trujillo.
That's our next trip.
Yeah. Trujillo is beautiful, by the way. Yeah. It is one of the oldest towns in all of Europe, and it has a 10th century Moorish castle that was developed after Caesar built a tower called the Tower of Julius, which in Latin is Trujillo. That's what it means. And so Trujillo is Tower of Julius. And so my name, folks, that's what I'm talking about. But there's a castle there, and then but I thought we were just going to go to this sleepy little town, whatever. No, it's like... really nice. Everyone's driving Land Rovers and Mercedes-Benz. Yeah. There's cobblestones streets everywhere, and it's the nickname of Trujillo is the Tierra de los Conquistadores. It's the land of the conquerors, because Pizarro, who created all these, like took over all these Central and South American towns, was from Trujillo. So he would do it in the name of Trujillo. I'm like, keep our name out of your mouth, man. You're like killing a lot of people, taking over places.
Imperialists.
That's funny.
Anyhow, Spain is beautiful. There's a lot out of there. So I was just concerned, where you went.
But that begs the question, which I've been wondering, is you have this history of, you're French trained, but then you worked in with David Chang, and you have this super appreciation for Asian food and Southeast Asian food working in Singapore. Why Spanish tapas? Like, you had come from Rosewater, which is a little bit more like American, Mediterranean, eclectic influence. And then, so what makes you choose to do tapas?
There's no Spanish tapas in North Hills, in that area.
True.
You know, you have Barcelona right down the street here, but in that North Hills area, kind of North Raleigh area, there's no Spanish tapas.
Yeah.
And because of COVID, there's a lot of vacancies. So we had the opportunity. We figured, let's try it. Let's try a Spanish tapas theme.
How does that work within Giorgio Hospitality? Like, so you are the chef at Rosewater.
Uh-huh.
And then they are like, hey, Brian, you're doing a great job here. Because Giorgio has a history of making his chefs into owners and partners and other. So do they say to you, hey, we want to do something with you. What do you want to do? Or do they say, we're thinking about this idea for a Spanish restaurant. Would you be partnering it?
Yes. They approach you with the idea, the concept. They'll show you the space, everything.
Oh, so they already had it kind of laid out.
They had it locked in. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They had the space because they got that and the pizza bar at the same time.
Yeah.
So... they had the space, and then they came up with the idea, and I was on board. You know, it's one of those things where I've never done Spanish tapas, so I knew it was going to be a big project. I was going to learn a lot from it, and I knew there was going to be a trip coming up for it.
Yeah, it's all
So, you know, you got to be thinking when they ask you these questions of everything that can go on.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah, incentivize.
So, exactly. So
I just was at the pizza bar, too. I ate there last week. Felicia and I, we got a few little items, and it was awesome. And, man, like, it makes me hopeful for the future. You know, I've been Mr.
Negative Raleigh.
Nally.
Yeah.
But no, business is thriving, and people are going out. That's the nice thing.
Like,
I mean, more than ever in my short time in North Carolina, which is going on 7 years now, but I remember when we first, and I explained this to somebody recently who had moved here somewhat recently. Actually, Josh, the chef at J Lights downtown, give Jared a nice plug there.
Yeah.
But he was saying, yeah, you know, we're struggling with the dinner and even people that live here. And I was like, here's the thing that I learned about Raleigh a long time ago. And I think you may have said this to me back in the day when you were at Midtown, is that in places like New York and Chicago and Los Angeles, people don't have a lot of room in their kitchens. They don't have big kitchens. So they go out to dinner. They frequent the restaurants. But
You're not going to invite a couple over to your house because you have no space.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or rarely. Yeah. You have to be really intimate with them, right?
Yeah.
But in a place like Raleigh, where a lot of people have big houses and live more in a suburban area, they have great kitchens. So they're not going out to eat as much.
Yeah, you got supper clubs, people know how to cook.
And people know how to cook. But that is changing with places like North Hills, where there's more hotel or apartment buildings, and then you have Smoky Hollow, like where Jay Light's in. So and I notice it now in my wine business that, I mean, restaurants, January is like ho-hum, slow it down.
Yeah.
We
were cranking
crazy
at Kraft,
and I remember going there to do a staff training. It was like Friday at 5 o'clock, and you're like, I look around like, holy shit, you guys are like cranking.
Matt just changed our entire wine program. We went from 8 wines to completely revamp, and now we have like 17 wines.
Oh, wow.
And I just sent an order to him yesterday that basically filled in every single item. Like, all of them were all, like, that was the nice part, is that there was a little bit of the entire menu that was sold fairly well. And
people
so,
are branching out. Good. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to get to my favorite thing that you brought over. I mentioned it. You are a master of octopus, a master of the pulpo.
The pulpo.
Yeah.
The pulpo, yeah.
And I'll just share this little insight. And you've heard this. I probably said it to you 5 times already, but nobody else has heard it. So, you know, we went there to eat last Thursday. And, of course, we had to order the pulpo because you have a pulpo dish on the menu. And Sarah didn't know that Brian was also the chef at Las Ramblas, was also the chef at Rosewater. Now, at Rosewater, we went there to eat all the time because of the octopus. So I was like, oh, you know, I'm really excited to try this because Brian's the chef at Rosewater. And so she takes one bite and she goes, better.
Oh, don't tell the chef de cuisine that at Rosewater.
Okay. I did say this story in front of Laszlo. Yeah. He was very curious. Yeah. Like, what do you mean better?
Yeah.
Keep it consistent. So what's your secret to octopus?
Octopus. So we usually get the 6 to 8 pound Spanish octopus that comes in. We defrost it. But I think my personal secret to it is that we take a lot of kosher salt and we massage it.
Yeah.
Like, we really rub it in the sink. And then you see, like, it sounds gross, but it's a very slimy texture that comes out of the octopus. And you got to do it for, like, each one probably, like, 4 to 5 minutes. Just really.
No wonder why your forearms are so jacked.
Exactly. Rubbing it, massaging it. And then you got to rinse all that goo off. And then we bathe it in red wine and black peppercorns for like 30 minutes. Just let it soak in there. And then we steam it for 45 minutes.
Okay.
So I think
And then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, then you can break it down, portion it, do however you want to. But that's, I think, by salt.
Massage.
Get all
salt.
Get all the gooey stuff out.
Red wine.
Clean it. Red wine.
Yeah.
Steam.
Sounds like a date, you know?
It does. That's romantic.
Steam bath, red
wine.
Well,
add some salt bath, some red wine, and then jacuzzi.
Get all the gooey stuff off.
Yeah, it's a date.
Is there a technique after that, then? Mm-hmm. What makes it different from Rosewater
both those processes are the same for the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are they different then as you finish them?
The only thing different is we portion them, but at Rosewater, we char them on a plancha.
Yeah.
And then at Las Ramblas, we char them in a nonstick pan. So I think the char in the nonstick pan, you get a little more of a char and a crisp
at
Las Ramblas. because you can control it a little bit better.
Yeah.
In Rosewater, we have the big plancha, so you know, you
it's
have
like a big cold, flat top. Yeah, for those basically. That don't know what that is. Yeah.
But also, there's some different. Because you use some different, like, there's different spices in the rose water. Like, the rose water one is spicier.
Yeah, we use Fresno's. We use, like, this Patas Bravas sauce at the one in Rosewater.
Okay.
I know it's, like, a thing, but.
Yeah.
But, yeah, a lot of Fresno's, Patas Bravas sauce, and chimichurri. So, you're going to get a lot more heat in that dish. Whereas Las Ramblas, it's just salt, pepper, and then we finish it with the piquillo puree, potato puree.
Yeah.
And crispy chickpeas with paprika.
That's right. And the crispy chickpeas. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so just after hearing that in my mind, that's probably why Sarah said that, is because she doesn't like the spice.
Yeah.
She doesn't like the heat so much. So that, there you go. You can tell Maslow that.
Yeah.
Or your sous chef that.
Let's, all right. So let's think about this. I love thinking about things in more of a psychological sense.
Okay.
You were a kid, you were surfing, you sliced a pig at 18, at around, I was doing the math, around like 27 or so, seemingly it was probably when you were working for David Chang. And
no, I was working for David Chang when I was like 22.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
All right, so you did this as a younger kid, and you're in your mid to late 30s now? Is
that 38.
Right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Where do you, how do you feel right now? Career-wise, you've got a few restaurants that require your attention. You've got some ownership. You are, you know, we didn't mention it, but like when you first came into the scene here in North Hills or in North Carolina, I believe you're working for Trophy.
Yep.
That's how we first met you, because you all collaborated and did an event here at our happy hours that we do at the kitchen, which was super cool. That was our first meeting with working with you. But so. Just like you, I've seen your growth. I've seen you just really kind of come onto the scene and do this. But how do you feel about your career right now and where it is and where what you want to do, where you want to be?
I feel very privileged of where I am, because to get the opportunity that I got, it's huge as a chef and now a restaurateur. It's amazing. But for me, it's like I'm always pushing. Like, okay, what's the next step? What's the next step? You know, I don't get bored easily, but I get restless really easily. You know?
Complacency is the worst for an artist.
Yeah, I like to keep pushing myself, have multiple projects going, always keeping busy. And then this way too, you can help nurture younger people to be in your spot one day. Like I'm hoping my chef de cuisine, he's 26 right now, he's amazing, and I just hope and 5-10 years or whatever, he gets the opportunity that I got.
That's so, the Vietnamese guy.
Yeah, Lam.
Lam, yeah.
Yep, Lam. He's doing a very good job over there. But I'm really happy where I am right now. I have no complaints, you know. I'm just looking for what's the next thing.
You know? Well, we'll have to reach out to you on Thursday after this episode comes out and get your thoughts then, because, I mean, talk about the NCF and bump after Thursday. Kicking the paparazzi from your house.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
Well, I feel the same way as like when you're running a place, you're looking at your calendar, you're trying to coordinate things, you know, whether it's just opening the place for the first time. But then now once you've been open for a bit, you're like, how do we activate something? You got like an event that you're going to do, a collaboration with somebody or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you get all these things on your plate. Like I know Crafton's about to hit their 1-year anniversary coming up, if this is what's, I think this is what's going out this week. Mm-hmm. So Crafton's anniversary is this weekend, y'all. So if you want to come on out, it's going to be fun. We're doing a big like party out there. Megan from NC Eat and Play is going to be out hanging out with us.
Nice.
But you get all these things in your calendar and you're just like, there's a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of stress where you're like, I've got to do this. Did I remember to do this? Have I ordered enough? Did Matt send me the wine? Do I have the wine? Did I get enough beer? Is Ine sending me the right amount of beer? You know, and like you're worried about all that stuff. And then, you know, you say like when you're sitting on the couch having a beer with your spouse, you're like, I'll just be so happy once we get through all this stuff and you're just chill. But then you get through all that stuff and you're just chill and you're like, all right, I got to go do something.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like immediately you got to like figure out the next thing. At least that's the way my brain works. And seems like that's the way we all are working. It's like we thirst for activity, right? Mm-hmm. And to get something out of this business that is, I mean, it would be nice if just the doors were lined with people every day and you didn't have to do anything additional. But if that was the case, that would be complacency as well.
It'd be too easy.
And yeah, you'd be like, well, now we got to do something else. So yeah, it's just part of the business, I guess.
I just like all the hurdles and the steps you have to go through, you know, you got to, because right now it's for me, like I'm a partner, so now I'm not relying on anybody. It's my thoughts, my decisions that either can help or break the company, you know, which is scary, but I'm into it. I like it, you know.
Yeah.
I like the pressure. I like the rewards from it. So it pays off, you know, and it's cool for my kids to see too, you know. They come in, these little hoodlums that...
How many children and what are their ages?
I have 2 kids, 3 and 7.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so it's awesome.
And you get to see them? Do you get to be a parent?
Yeah, I, you know, wake up early, get them ready for school, things like that. They come in the restaurant once a week or so. My daughter's, she claims she's a foodie. But yeah, my son doesn't eat anything. If it's not white or yellow, he won't eat, you know, chicken nuggets, noodles, toast.
He and Shiloh could get married. Yeah. It's the exact same thing.
That's his diet.
But wasn't you saying that your daughter loves the pork cheeks?
Ah, she loves pork cheeks, oysters, all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one last question before, I don't think we ever got to this. What brought you to North Carolina?
North Carolina. So in California, I owned a condo and I had... My daughter at the time is, I think, around 1 year old, and we were thinking about having a second kid, and there's like no way we can have another kid in this 900-square-foot condo. So I just put it on the market, and I said, let's see where we end up. And literally the next day, my wife's best friend that lives in Raleigh, the house next to them went up for sale. So we just blind offer, just put an offer on it, wrote the owner a letter. Letters are a thing in my past, you know. Wrote a letter and we got it.
Nice.
So
you and I moved here around the same time. Yeah, about six and a half years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And at the time too, I applied for a job out here just to see what happens. And I don't know, Mike Haken. He's the owner of what's that area?
Fenton.
Here in Raleigh.
The Oakwood area? No.
Right Iron here. Works, across the street from Brewery Bravana, where's City Market?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So So he owned City Market, and they were going to open up that restaurant, but things fell through. So I left and worked with Trophy. But
so the only thing that brought you there was brought you here was your wife's friend lived in Raleigh and saw a house up for sale and was like, you guys should buy it.
Yep.
There you go. It's who you know.
It's who you know.
Yeah. That's exactly how we got out here. It was here or Vermont. And Vermont was just too cold.
Right. I'll come back. I'll tell everybody about Vermont. I'll be a professional.
Yeah. You have to let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, Matt, what should I do? Or for both of you? I snowboard. I own a snowboard and snowboard boots and all the gear. Although Felicia keeps telling me, "Don't bring it; they're gonna lose it." All this stuff, like the airlines are a bunch of nincompoops; they're gonna lose all your stuff. Should I bring my snowboarding gear or should I rent while I'm there?
I mean, well, we can talk about this offline, but here's the thing. The rest of your family has to rent and stuff, right?
No.
They don't?
The Vitorinis have a bunch of ski stuff.
Oh. Well, then screw it. Bring it.
Bring it.
Because the most annoying thing is having to wait in line and organize the whole thing. Yeah. So
Told her, I said, if they lose all my stuff, then I'll be in the same situation as if I had to rent it.
Yeah. But also, if you have the proper like snowboard bag and boots, then bring it, man.
And if you're used to your board, you should just use your board.
Yeah, bro.
You know, that's how I am.
I'm going to rip the rails, bro.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just make sure you wear a helmet.
Oh, yeah. I have to keep this noodle intact. But, well, hey, Brian, thank you. Thanks for bringing a little SoCal flair.
Yes, sir.
Into the food scene of the Triangle in North Carolina. This guy over here with two thumbs loves that.
Yep.
And I appreciate you coming in here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being here, and thanks for coming to Raleigh and doing your thing here. This is the restaurants are delicious, and we love to eat them. So for everybody out there, go to Rosewater, go to Las Ramblas. You will eat and drink extremely merrily.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes, and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.